The Iowa Board of Regents governs Iowa's three public universities. Today, we spend the hour with the president of the Board of Regents, Bruce Rastetter. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll ask him about his legislative priorities, including funding for the state's public universities, his role this election as a top Republican donor, and also the controversy surrounding the hiring of the new University of Iowa president. You can join us with your questions for Regents President Bruce Rastetter. First, this hour's news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. My guest this hour is the president of the Iowa Board of Regents, Bruce Rastetter. The Board of Regents governs the three public universities, and we want to ask him this hour about legislative priorities, including funding for the public universities. As he is a top Republican donor, I want to ask him about this very exciting election year a little bit later in the program, and of course the controversy surrounding the hiring of the new University of Iowa president, which has certainly caused many headlines over the last few weeks. If you'd like to join our conversation, dial toll-free 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100 for pose your question to Bruce Rastetter, president of the Iowa Board of Regents. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Regent Rastetter, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you, Ben. Happy to be here.
Let's start off with, as I said, what's been in the news. As a matter of fact, last week, the American Association of University Professors released a blistering report concluding that the process that the Iowa Board of Regents used while considering whether to hire Bruce Harreld as the new president of the University of Iowa gave, in the words of the report, only an illusion of an open, honest search. The report says that the search was structured and engineered by the Regents' leadership from the outset to identify a figure from the business world congenial to its image of transformative leadership. What's your comment about this scathing report by the AAUP?
Well, I think if you think about the search conducted at the University of Iowa and maybe step back a little bit on the two previous searches at the University of Northern Iowa and Iowa State University, the search committees were almost identical. On University of Northern Iowa search, we had 8 faculty members. Iowa State University search, we had 7. We had 7 University of Iowa, plus John Robillard chairing the committee. And it was a committee that was a broad committee. And one of the charges of the committee was to recruit candidates. And I think I've said, and other members of the committee have said, that's exactly what we did, recruit multiple candidates. And I, in fact, as been reported previously, recruited 6 candidates. And I know John Robillard recruited others, and so did other members of the search committee. So we believe it was a similar process. It was open. It was transparent. And yes, when you recruit candidates, there's meetings and there's encouragement to have those candidates participate in the process, and that's what you saw unfold.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain, though, this report? And they sent independent investigators. One of the my guests last week, Michael DeCesar, a chair of the Committee on Collegiate and University Governance for the American Association of University Professors. He was one of the people who came to investigate it. How do you explain the fact that they came to the conclusion that this was, and he used this word in my conversation last week, a sham?
You know, first of all, that's his opinion. They're an out-of-state group that does, the Board of Regents does not report to. And in our response to them early on, we pointed out that we have a lawsuit and against the board on the search process, and that we're not going to participate in their questions because of that. The reality is there's been much written about this, much talked about. Search committee was a large, broad search committee. And the reality of what happened when we think about the search, we had 80 people apply. We had 12 candidates interviewed in Chicago. We chose 4 to be finalists. And all 4 finalists were voted by consensus to Iowa City and the open process to come on campus and knew at that point in time that once those four came on campus, it would be in the hands of the Board of Regents.
Mm-hmm. You've hired, as the Board of Regents president, two other presidents for the other public universities, UNI and ISU. Both of them had academic backgrounds. How do you respond to criticism that Bruce Harreld is unqualified?
Well, I mean, first of all, I would suggest to you, if you followed the Iowa State University search closely, we had candidates that were much different that were finalists. One had been a provost. The other had grown up through the university as a professor, but then in the University of North Carolina systems research area. So hadn't followed the typical academic path to become a president. And quite frankly, and we've talked about this, but during that search process, there were a number of faculty members who were extremely concerned about Steve Leaf's ability to be president of the university and that he hadn't had experience in the typical manner that most have. And I think if you'd asked faculty members today that were unhappy with that choice 3 years ago, they'd say that worked out pretty well for them.
And you think the same will happen in this case?
And I think the same will happen here. And I think one of the things that doesn't often get reported is that Bruce Harreld does have some academic experience. He was not only a professor at Kellogg Business School, he was also taught in the Harvard Business School for 6 years. Mm-hmm. And the last, you know, one of the things, Ben, that we often think about in terms of quality of education, the last time, you know, some of us looked, Harvard's a pretty good business school. And I assume they hire pretty good faculty to be part of that. And I think as we thought about those experiences, we thought about a large, complex institution that the University of Iowa is. And his background, and at Harvard he taught leadership classes, and he taught team building and how you collaboratively work to make things better. So I don't buy the idea that he had zero academic experience when he had some significant academic experience at one of the country's top universities.
As I mentioned, last week I spoke with Michael DeCesar. He was one of the investigators, chair of the Committee on College and University Governance for the American Association of University Professors. Sham was the word he described. You said that was his opinion to describe the process, the selection process of Bruce Harreld. He said you and other regents declined to be interviewed for the investigation because of the litigation?
Because of the litigation,
okay.
Correct.
So I asked him on this show last week, and I wanted to play a little excerpt of it, what message he has for you. Let's listen.
I think the message, not a question, but the message that I would communicate to him is that this is an important time in the history of the University of Iowa. There's a clear disconnect between the faculty and the board. Regardless of who was appointed president, regardless of Mr. Harreld himself, there's a clear disconnect between the faculty and the board. And I would encourage Mr. Rastetter in the strongest possible terms to reach out to the faculty. The faculty has made several efforts to extend an olive branch to the board, and they've been rebuffed. I would encourage him to try to reciprocate.
Okay, what about this charge here, rebuffing efforts to make peace on this issue with the faculty?
You know, I don't remember ever rebuffing efforts. I met with multiple faculty members, and I think maybe if we back up a couple of years in the significant time that both myself and Katie Mulholland, pro tem, the regents have spent with faculty here. One of the consistent messages that we heard from the faculty that they wanted to see this university improve, that they had felt that there was a decline in some of the programs. And I think recently you've heard President Harreld talk about the national rankings over the past 6 to 8 years have declined. And we wanted to see that change, as did the faculty members. And so as we had those discussions and as we set up the search committee, and I think if you recall, the president of the faculty senate and the vice president of the faculty senate were both on the search committee. It chose the members to be on that and recommended it. And we had a broad group from the public. But we met multiple times. We heard from the faculty. I have heard from significant faculty since our selection. And a number of them very privately are extremely positive about the selection.
Very privately. They won't go public.
Well, I think one of the challenges that they saw is the issues at the town hall meeting that had turned extremely negative and disrespectful. And I think they want to make sure their voices are heard, and they choose to do it in a way that is is very direct in talking about the challenges of the university, the opportunity here to take a really great university and make it much greater. And to change that directional of the university to make sure that improvement is there. And that is what the board is focused on. And I think recently in those faculty meetings that you've seen President Harold have with the faculty, he's doing the right things in terms of reaching out, talking to those people. If any faculty members want to have conversation with me, most of them have my cell phone number. And we'll continue to. And we believe in shared governance, and we'll continue to do that and encourage them to help make this place a better place, and we'll do that as well.
You obviously want change in the University of Iowa. Why is a business leader needed at this time? Why is it better than a leader who would have a heavy emphasis with a more of an academic background, as we do in the other public universities? Why is the business leadership so important at this time for this university, the University of Iowa?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, I think it's unfair to just call him a business leader. I mean, back to my previous comments, he has experience in multiple situations beyond just business that are important. But also, you have University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics that sees 1.4 million people a year, has significant building projects going on. It's critical to the state. You have the university with multiple programs, including the graduate programs. You have significant new buildings coming on campus, and you need to develop a strategic plan as to the direction of the university. That is something over and over again we heard from the faculty, that they want to see those programs improve. They want to have excellence across the board. And so I think it was the combination of that skill set that became very clear to the number of the board members.
Mm. Let me share with you news. I know you drove from the western part of the state to Iowa City today, and this news came out just this morning. The AP is reporting that President Harold has apologized to one employee of the UI saying publicly that instructors who aren't ready to teach their classes should be shot. Harold said it was an unfortunate off-the-cuff remark, and we know people can make off-the-cuff remarks. It's a commonly used expression. A person should be shot for this or that. But I guess the point here is we don't expect such an expression to come from a leader of a major university, a major public figure, especially at a university that has experienced a mass shooting that took five lives, as it did at the University of Iowa in 1991, and especially at a time when the country is experiencing a rash of mass shooting. How much does this concern you as President Harold is trying to establish confidence in his faculty?
Well, I think I read the same article, and in fact, just before I came in, Ben, and clearly I was extremely glad to see that he apologized immediately, that as the article said, it was a rhetorical response to a question he had via email. Shouldn't have been flippant. I'm glad he responded quickly and apologized, and certainly everyone is going to make mistakes. I've seen the other two presidents make mistakes. I saw the previous president make mistakes in comments that Sally made. And I think clearly people need to apologize when they are inappropriate on it, and he did that.
Doesn't shake your confidence in him, his judgment?
No, it doesn't. I think I would assume that on occasion you said things on air that you wished you hadn't, and I know I certainly have. So, let's move on. And had he not apologized, then that would have been an issue.
I am not the president of a university, I guess, is the point here, too. Bruce Rastetter is my guest, president of the Iowa Board of Regents. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Shortly after the announcement was made that Bruce Harold was hired to be the University of Iowa president, you announced that you would back a $4.5 million funding increase for the University of Iowa. It's a huge change of heart from where you were before, it seems, wanting to decrease funding for the University of Iowa, which was part of a funding model proposed in the last legislative session by the regents. Now you're convinced that this 1.9% increase was, in your words, critical to advance the university's teaching and research mission. What convinced you, this change of heart that results in $4.5 million more for the University of Iowa?
Well, first of all, Ben, it wasn't a change of heart. And if you think about performance funding, our request on performance funding was to backfill the University of Iowa on any dollars lost. So our approach on that was never to cost the University of Iowa a dime in the process. It was to have board priorities on issues like in-state resident students, because we know the cost to educate them is higher than the cost of tuition, and the other two universities have a higher percentage and number of in-state. But also it was critical issues around diversity and income levels and access and affordability and progress to degree and degree attainment. And so there was never, as part of that program, an initiative by the board or myself to decrease the amount of money that the University of Iowa would receive. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because there was not any of that during that request.
And also you speak to the wide speculation, or the interpretation, I guess you'd say, that money to the faculty was to help quell the storm of controversy.
You know, no. I think clearly as President Harold had asked about, and one of his issues is how do we improve the quality of teaching, and how do we improve the quality of the professors and recruitment of quality professors, and not lose the really great ones and good ones that we have here. And so targeted dollars towards those specific areas are critical long term to the university. So I think we responded to that, and as we did to the other two universities' requests.
The Board of Regents, I understand, is considering whether to ask the Iowa legislature in the upcoming session to begin in January for an average 3% increase in the state appropriations to the general education funds of the state's three public universities. However, I understand that the increase would not be distributed equally, breaking down to 8.1% to the University of Northern Iowa, 4.5% to Iowa State University, and nothing for the University of Iowa in terms of an increase. Can you explain the reason?
$4.5 million is part of that increase.
So
to the University of Iowa.
So there actually is not a 0% increase for the University of Iowa.
No, the $4.5 million goes with the general appropriation dollars, and with that, President Harrell has just defined what he's going to do with those dollars, just as the other two universities have defined what they're going to do with those dollars that are added to the general appropriations.
Bruce Harreld, my guest. He's
Bruce Rastetter.
Bruce Harreld. Sorry, we're talking. You're both Bruces. I'm sorry. I apologize for that. Bruce Rastetter, of course, president of the Board of Regents. Let's go to some callers. So we're taking a few callers this hour. 1-866-780-9100. Claire is joining us. Clara, from West Branch. Hi, Clara. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for the president. The Associated Press came out with a rather troubling story asserting that the University of Iowa had quietly awarded several no-bid contracts to the former Iowa Republican Party chair, Matt Strawn. Are you ready to call for an independent investigation of this story by a very reputable news media?
Okay. Clara, thank you very much. A little bit of background on this. I have some notes on this before you, if I may, President.
Mm-hmm.
This is a story about no-bid contracts totaling over $300,000 to a prominent GOP consultant for polling and social media services, according to a review by the Associated Press. Critics saying the contracts with former Iowa Republican Party Chairman Matt Strawn's company seem to appear – to be a sweetheart deal among Republican insiders. University policy normally requiring competitive bidding to ensure services obtained at the lowest cost. So, Claire brought up that, a little background on that. Should the universities have competitively bid this?
Well, I think a couple of things about this. One, we have this situation a number of times across the universities where underneath a certain threshold, the universities don't have to bid. I frankly, when I read it in the paper, it was the first that I knew that Matt Strawn was doing work here. And I think he's capable, and clearly the university did. But also, you know, the optics of this are not pretty or perfect. And I believe that in those situations, the university should do a bid process. So we'll be talking about that. We have with all three universities. And as part of our board policy, we'll be looking at that number threshold that exists where they don't have to go out to bids, and we'll be reviewing that. And I would guess in April you'd see us have specific policy changes that will reflect around that.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps in a related case, this one at ISU, Craig Paulson, the former Speaker of the Iowa House of Representatives, a Republican, was hired by Iowa State University to a position that was not advertised. This also despite an ISU policy aimed at ensuring, in its words, employment, diversity, equal opportunity, and broad candidate pools. It cited an exception. ISU waived this advertising requirement, hired Paulson directly. He'll head a new supply chain management program for a salary of $135,000 per year. There, sort of the same question. Should ISU have hired him without a search?
I think there should have been advertising that went on at Iowa State. I've related my opinion to the president on that. And I think it's no different than the same situation existed on Jim Leach. There was an advertising happened when he was hired on at the law school, and understand why he was being offered a job at Harvard. And he's a capable guy and well-known and would be extremely additive to the law school. So I think in these situations, whether it's Jim Leach or whether it's Craig Paulson, I think the universities need to be aware and advertise for those positions so that the public's aware of that situation going on. I don't think that deters away from Craig's ability or Jim's ability, but I think it just makes sense for them to do
right.
that.
And you used the word optics earlier. It's important to have the right optics. How do you, as the leader of the governing board of the public universities, watch for and ferret out possible, I'm not saying these are, but possible cronyism?
Well, I think the key, whether it's relatives being hired or family members, I think there's an HR process set up at the universities that they need to follow. And they need to be mindful that they're public institutions, taxpayers' dollars, and they treat those in a fiduciary way. So I think all those things continue to need to be revisited as these situations arise. We do that. We encourage them to manage their HR, being mindful of all those things.
Before we go to break, we have about a minute or so left. I just wanted a word here, perhaps just clarification about the accountability you have. Who are you accountable to as president and board members of the Board of Regents? How does that work? Do you look to public opinion? Do you look to faculty opinion at the public universities? Where's the accountability?
Well, I think you're accountable to all the stakeholders. For the public university system, so you're accountable to the students. I think it starts with them, and at the end of the day, they are the customers of the university and should be viewed as that. And so, how do we make it accessible and affordable and improve the quality of education? Because that's ultimately the mission of the public universities. Mm-hmm. And second, you're responsible to the institution and all the employees and people that are there. You're responsible to the taxpayers of Iowa. And ultimately, you're responsible to the legislature and the governor who control the appropriations, who make the appointments to the board, and manage that process.
Okay. Can you, in 30 seconds, tell me where you'd like to see the public universities in 5 or 10 years? How would they change in the broadest brushstrokes?
Well, I think one of our concerns long term has been student debt. Iowa has the eighth highest student debt in the country. As state appropriations decreased, it was easy, or it was important, I think, when state appropriations decreased, for the board to increase tuition. That has led to high student debt. So our focus is maintaining for the next generation accessibility, affordability, and how we improve the quality of education.
Okay. Board of Regents president is with us, and he will stay with us for the second half hour of River to River. We're going to take a short break right now. Bruce Rastetter is with us. If you'd like to pose a question, our toll-free number, 1-866-780-9100. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the presidential race and also the Ag Summit that was heard that Bruce Rastetter put on earlier this year. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're spending live with the president of the Board of Regents, Bruce Rastetter. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Much of the last half hour spent talking about the selection of Bruce Harreld as the University of Iowa president and also funding for the universities and so on. Before we move on to some other topics, let's get some quick calls that have dialed 1-866-780-9100. Lauren is with us in Iowa City. Lauren, we're trying to squeeze in as many topics for Bruce Rastetter as possible this hour, but briefly, what's on your mind? What's your question?
I'd like to return to an old topic, which is the selection of Bruce Herold as president of the University of Iowa. Mr. Rastetter, as well as other Regents members, have said that there were other stakeholders who supported this choice. But since the Faculty Senate and the Faculty Assembly and the American Association of University Professors have condemned the search, the undergraduates and the graduate students have also been against the selection. Indeed, I have not spoken to a single individual on the campus of the University of Iowa who supports the search. So I'm very interested in who the stakeholders are by name who supported the selection of Mr. Herold. Thank you.
Lauren, thank you from Iowa City. Bruce Rastetter.
Well, I think the reality is we've had a number of faculty members come forward. A number of the search committee members were supportive. I think they've heard Dr. Robillard talk about the process, talk about his views and opinions on Bruce Herold.
Mm-hmm. And Lauren asked by name. I don't know if you want to give names.
And Dr. Robillard is one I'll mention by name. He's on public record of doing that, and he's one of the most well-respected people in the Iowa City community and has done a terrific job as head of the hospital, as interim president, as chair of the search committee. And I think it has been acknowledged that the search committee members, including the faculty, voted with consensus all four candidates to campus. In regards to private conversations I've had with faculty members that have come up to me in various settings, phone calls, people around the state that are extremely supportive of the hire, because at the end of the day, it is the University of Iowa, and we need to reflect that. And I've heard a number of those positives. So we believe the search was open and fair. We believe the process was. And there's a difference between taking input from everyone and agreeing with everyone. So I think that's what the board processed during that whole search initiative that happened.
Okay. Brent is in Iowa City. We'll move on to another topic. But I believe, Brent, you want to talk about the decision of Bruce Herold as well?
Yes. You know, I have to say that at the outset, in terms of looking at the process for the hiring and the choice of Bruce, my political sensibility said that this was a bad decision that was poorly executed. But after I stepped back and looked at it from the role of a customer who has two students at Iowa in my immediate family, and as an employer who hires Iowa graduates or Iowa students as interns, I see a real gap in terms of customer service and what I would consider standard best practices for business. And I often felt that academic institutions, there's a disconnect in terms of their role in the community and their role within the academic community. And I can begin to understand the idea that a fresh voice needs to come in that can address some of those disparities. So I'm beginning to understand there might be wisdom in the choice of Bruce that definitely has rankled some of the academics within the institution. But, again, as an employer and a customer, if you will, of University of Iowa Services, there are definite needs for improvement.
Brent, thank you for that from Iowa City. I don't know if Regent Rastetter, if you want to comment or we can move on.
I just want to thank Brent for his comments. I think, you know, back to my earlier comments, it's a complex university. And as we think about student debt, we think about state support, we think about the importance of philanthropy, we think about the cost to parents and really the outcomes, we want to see all three public universities improve, get better. And as public universities, we want to maintain that accessibility, affordability. There are a number of first-generation Iowa students out there that's parents never went to college that are of medium or lower income that we need to make sure that these universities are here to help improve the quality of their life. And at the end of the day, that's why the universities exist, and that's why it's so important.
President of the Board of Regents, Bruce Rastetter, live with us on this edition of River to River. I'm Ben Kiefer. We have a little over 15 minutes left of the program, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk a little bit about this presidential race. Very interesting election year. But also, I want to make sure our listeners know that you are a major contributor to the Republican Party. In fact, here's a quote about you from Politico earlier this year. Politico writes, he's emerged as the state's top Republican donor at both the federal and state level. donating nearly $500,000 and $1.1 million, respectively, since 2003. This is according to campaign finance disclosures. I wonder if you would mind sharing who you're contributing money to during this election season.
Well, I think it was about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, when I endorsed Chris Christie for president. And don't know that that gave him a big bump in the polls in doing that, but have gotten to know him over the years, feel he's a really solid guy, would make a good president, and has a very rational thought process. So wanted to do that, have done that, so we'll see where that ends up.
Mm-hmm. What is your motivation for donating a considerable amount of money to the Republican cause?
Well, I think, first of all, I start out with that I grew up on a small farm, a 320-acre rented farm. Parents raised five kids, wanted, encouraged all of us to get an education, make a difference, and lead the farm. And so having grown up with those humble beginnings and having been fortunate to have success in business, and I think hard work and timing and luck all contribute to that. But you have to be lucky as well as work hard and be knowledgeable. But at the end of the day, my concern is our economic system, the American dream, how we maintain that, how back to the education system, how we make sure that it's accessible for people like me in the future, that education can lift you out of poverty, can make a difference in your life, income, the rest of your life. And the same is true as why I'm involved in politics. My concern is how do we maintain a system going forward that encourages success, mm-hmm. encourages people to employ people in high-quality jobs, to have health care. That's one of the things we've done over the last 25 years in every company that I've had. We had a health care insurance policy, group policies, long before it became popular to do that. I think employers have a responsibility to do all those things.
Let me follow up. This is a tweet from Ella, who's been listening, that came in just a few minutes ago. How does the president of the Board of Regents, how do you feel about the Republican Party's lack of support? These are her words, support for affordable education. As a student, how can I trust him to keep my interests in mind when he supports a party that doesn't support affordability? That's a tweet from Ella.
Yeah, I think all you have to do, and you know, the reflection of that is in the work that we've done. When I became a board member and previous boards, there had gone from being 70% state support to the public institutions and 30% from tuition. That had reversed over time. And so one of our goals was the board was to reach out to the state, both Republicans and Democrats, and say, we need you to support the public institutions rather than just have the institution raise tuition on the backs of parents and students and the affordability part. So one of the things I feel good about is we've been able to reverse that trend. If you remember, 3 years ago, we got a 2.6% increase and we froze tuition. 2 years ago, we got a 4% increase in state appropriations and froze tuition. So we have changed the needle somewhat, 6.5% over that couple-year period of time. We continue to ask the state to support the public institutions as critical as part of the accessibility, affordability, or that will be lost in the future.
Earlier this year, Bruce Rastetter, you hosted the first ever Iowa Agriculture Summit. You chatted with each presidential candidate on stage for about 20 minutes before about 1,000 in the audience, I guess. Dozens of media outlets were present for this. Topics included that you chose: biofuels, free trade, immigration, conservation, biotechnology, food labeling, government subsidies, wind, solar power, livestock production. Kingmaker. I know you don't like this title. I'm just throwing it out there. It's often used in connection with your name in many, many articles. What was the idea behind the agricultural summit, if not to be a kingmaker of sorts among the Republican candidates?
Well, I think one of the things that we saw clearly in the previous Iowa caucuses, irrespective of the importance of agriculture, both to the state, the nation, and the world, with increasing world populations and the demand for food is going to more than double over the next 50 years as we go from 7 billion people to 9 billion people on the planet. And I think those issues had not been directly addressed. And rather than have politicians just get up and give speeches, some friends of mine thought about what's wrong with why not have an ag summit in which they're asked specific questions and forced to give answers, kind of like what you're doing today, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know where they're at on the issues. And so what we try to do is make the question's non-political. And I think some people were surprised that I asked the immigration question, because legal immigrant workers in agriculture and across this country are extremely important. So how do you assure that that's happening? What are their views on it? What are their views on food safety and how we get there? What are their views on GMO? Waters of the U.S., how we have sustainability in agriculture in terms of protecting the environment. All those things we felt needed to be asked. That's what we did. And I think anyone that watched thought it was a very direct, non-opinionated part on my part. Yeah, I have views on renewable fuels, wind, and wanted to ask him that.
Let's tackle as many as we can here. Immigration, certainly a top issue in this election cycle. How important is it for there to be a resolution here on the federal level, the comprehensive immigration reform? How important is that to be to have a resolution of that for agriculture here in Iowa?
Well, I think it's important for agriculture in Iowa because a significant portion of the workforce today and going forward is going to be immigrants. Mm-hmm. And that's true across the country, whether it's in citrus fields in California or building buildings in Iowa, or across the country. So I think having a well-thought-out immigration plan so that employers know that they're hiring legal workers that are contributing and also are being welcomed is extremely important. That's why the question was asked.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see the compromise happening on immigration? On the one side, you have build a wall, keep them all out, deport them, 11 million. On the other side of the spectrum, you have a path to citizenship, and both sides sort of intransigent. Where do you see that compromise happening that you say is very important for Iowa agriculture?
You know, since I'm not there, that's difficult. And I think that's one of the challenges with Washington is the whole divide and the partisan divide of rather than talking about it, you know, which is why we wanted to get each candidate on the record as to their views. And there was that whole diversity of views that you just talked about. And I just think it's important for the country beyond employment, for safety, that we have clear and concise immigration laws so everyone knows what they are and they abide by those same rules. And as an example, my grandfather came from Germany in 1917, the age of 18 years old, and immigrated to Dawes, Iowa through Ellis Island. So I think a lot of us wouldn't be here had we not had welcomed immigrants.
Bill is joining us from Sac City. I'll ask you to be brief, Bill, because we're running out of time, but what's your question for Bruce Rastetter?
Okay, thank you, Ben. And this is for Mr. Rastetter. Mr. Rastetter, you hosted the presidential forum on agriculture, as was just talked about, and you were the sole interviewer. You're a big contributor to the Republican and Governor Party and Governor Branstad. And the governor subsequently appointed you as one of the regents. And it appears to many Iowans you operate with a certain amount of hubris and represent perhaps the best government money can buy. And I just am interested in how you respond to this.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think clearly my background shows that I do it to make a difference. And I think clearly the results of being a regent, asking the governor to support a significant increase in state appropriations for the public universities and stop the decline of appropriations requests reflects a very positive way of what we've done. And I think my whole life has been about trying to make a difference. That's what I've done. And I think that anyone that watched the Ag Summit, one of the ways we got them there is because I do contribute to a variety of them, but also wanted to make sure that they were there, asked the very same questions so the public could hear their answers. I think that's the best that you can do, and that's what I try and do every day.
Bruce Rastetter, on Saturday, a historic agreement to address climate change was finalized in Paris. The agreement commits 195 countries to cutting greenhouse gas emissions. As an agribusiness executive, what is your view of this agreement and the impact it may have on agriculture here in Iowa? I don't know how much of the details you've been into there.
Yeah, I think I haven't seen a lot of the details of that. I think clearly the sustainability part, the make sure that management on nutrient runoff is controlled. I think on our farms, and if you'd come there, you'd see that we've developed wetlands. We have filter strips on every mile of creek or dredge that we have on the farms. We believe in that, and we think it's important. We have minimum tillage. We have multiple applications of nitrogen. So I think all those things are important in the details of it so that people can respond. Because at the end of the day, we do have this planet going from 7 billion to 9 billion people, and we need to make sure that food and high-quality food is continued to be affordable to everyone.
So you're on board with the agreement as far as you understand?
No, I don't know the details of it. I know one thing, that we're conservation-minded. We try to do the right thing, and that's reflected in our operation.
At the Ag Summit, you asked candidates about runoff and water issues, as you just mentioned. Governor Branstad has called the EPA's Water of the U.S. rule, which makes these sort of unnamed streams and creeks the smaller waterways in Iowa, it puts them under EPA monitoring rules. Branstad calls it overreach. Chris Christie, who you endorsed, calls it nothing more than a power grab. If you're interested in conservation and runoff, why not have the stricter regulations, the EPA be able to look at these smaller waterways?
Because I think you can have much more of an impact local and statewide, and you can have much more of an impact working with the NRCS locally, with the state, and with voluntary programs that make a difference
But the EPA has a really good track record for cleaning up this nation's waters when you consider the condition of the Great Lakes and many of the other water bodies that now, because of EPA rules, going back to the 1970s, doesn't it make sense? I guess to kind of draw a parallel, if I could, and tell me if this is wrong, since smaller streams and creeks are feeding into larger waterways, they're all part of the same circulatory system for our planet and our country. Doesn't it make sense to protect them all instead of sort of the doctor saying, if we care about your blood quality, we care about the arteries and veins, the blood in the artery and veins, but not the capillaries?
Well, I think one of the challenges with the EPA, and you saw it a couple of years ago, Ben, they wanted to limit dust out of a combine.
Yeah.
You know, there's proposals like that that clearly aren't well thought out, whereas local, state, DNR, others working with farmers to make those quality improvements can do that. I don't know if you've been in a combine before, but
sure,
it's a little hard
yes,
in the fall to
yes,
control
sir.
The dust out of the back of the combine. So I think there's real challenges like that and the practicality of as far away as Washington is doing what's right locally. I think we've seen that in local schools, which is why you have local school boards mm-hmm. and education systems throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of international students at Iowa's public universities. Of course, terrorism has been a big concern since the attacks in California as well. I wonder, do universities carry any responsibility in ensuring that international students are here solely for academic purposes? Does that change the conversation, enter the conversation? Do you leave that to the federal and state government?
Well, I think that has to be left to the federal and state government and Homeland Security. I think the universities do their normal process when students apply, whether they're in-state, out-of-state, or international students. And you want to ensure a safe campus. And you also want to be welcoming, which is why I think you see a variety of those things happening on the campus. So, you know, we can make sure that those processes are as safe and as open as possible. But at the end of the day, it's the federal government that is providing the visas and allowing those students to travel internationally.
We have a couple minutes left. Again, back to the Ag Summit held in March at the state fairgrounds. You asked Republican presidential hopefuls about their stance on renewable fuels, the standard. Since that time, just a few weeks ago, as a matter of fact, the Congress announced the renewable fuel standard for next year. Governor Branstad said he was extremely disappointed, in his words, in the decision. It's a complex issue, but how do you respond to next year's standard? And this is the amount of ethanol that will be produced and put into our fuels.
Yeah, and actually it was the EPA that announced the new standards, not Congress. And I think one of the challenges is, and the ethanol industry has gone away from any subsidies, so there is no government subsidy today. And what the renewable fuel standard is market access. Because if we didn't have that, you'd be mandated to use 100% oil. And because the oil companies control the retail shops. So it's disappointing that number was lowered. Clearly, the ability to produce more corn in this country and around the world has been reflected because of profitability a few years ago. That's going to continue to increase both for food and fuel.
Mm-hmm. Ted Cruz has taken the lead in the GOP in the polls as a presidential candidate after receiving an endorsement from family leader CEO Bob Vanderplaats. We have less than a minute left, but I wonder, on this same renewable fuel standard, does it concern you that he doesn't support the renewable fuel standard? Does that concern you?
You know, it does. And I think back to the market access comment. It would be like Coca-Cola controlling all the retail shops and not allowing Pepsi to be purchased anywhere. If consumers cannot have choice at the pump, then how will they purchase renewables? And so I think those same attributes are true with wind. If we're going to have a cleaner, better environment, then there's going to need to be some government support to change that industry, mm-hmm. which has happened in ethanol and been successful in lower costs, and has also happened and will happen in wind over time and solar.
Okay, I want to thank you very much for spending the hour with us. I want to thank our listeners for chipping in some questions here. Board of Regents President, Agribusiness Executive Bruce Rastetter, I want to thank you very much for coming into the studio this hour to answer some of my questions and also some questions from our listeners. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Claire Roth. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow, of course, Politics Wednesday, we'll be looking at polls. What makes a good poll? Several interesting polls out just in the last few days on the presidential race. But we want to really ask, what's the gold standard in polls? What makes a poll good? What should you be looking at when you hear poll results? That's tomorrow on River to River, along with many other things. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.